October the 30th, 1993. Thank you, Commander.
I don't know. You know. What it is that causes ones to become clannish. I don't know a different word to use. I don't want to make a big deal out of it. You know, we've been confronted from time to time. Well, it's either Hatton or me. Well, what in the world are these people supposed to say? Hatton isn't going anywhere else, and they can't. What in the world are you saying? This is what Desiree is saying. You must choose. I want all of you to read this. But I don't want to take time, please, to do it now. Choose what? Them versus them, for God's sakes. Children, your world is coming apart. And it's over your soul. What are you willing to do with your soul to stay in good graces with them or them or them? We're not trying to save anything. We've been saddled with a damn hard mission. To, regardless of whether this one, that one, or the other one doesn't like it, we are commissioned to tell you the truth and what is happening. And we're going to do it. We don't have groups. I repeat it. Dorma writes what I ask her to write. EJ is supposed to begin to edit a little bit, and then it goes on its way to its proper places, its proper individual places. Yes, we get it done as a group in this room, for instance. But we are not a group to do it. And if you can't get that in your head business-wise, you will forever be in trouble with the adversarial troops. They do not slip up. They do not forget their goal. They have never forgotten their goal. It is divide, conquer, get you enemies at one another, get you tattling on one another, getting you turning one another in. And I want to tell you once again, the adversary is shrewder than almost all of you. And don't come back telling me, well, it is the principle of the thing. You obviously don't know what the principles are. You would give your soul away. Two of the most hurtful things that have been said and done by George Green recently to Dorma is to pull Little Crow into it. He sent a package to Little Crow. Little Crow couldn't even look at it. He didn't read it. He opened it. The energy was so black from it, he tore it up, discarded it, got rid of it, got it out of his presence. Little Crow and Dorma, I call him the White Eagle. Why? Because he receives and operates for Grandfather, the silver ray of creation, if you want to break it down into these little silly things. But it's white. It's silver. in energy form if you're going to express. Dorma has served Atzon since long before Akhenaten. But you can trace it back to there. So I personally use the symbol of the white eagle or the silver eagle to identify. I don't use Carl Bryant or Doris, or I use EJ every now and then to classify him in here where you recognize a label. This is not to set anyone aside. So when one say, well, I want to be an eagle, go be an eagle. If you like this one better than the other one, claim this one. It does not mean anything more than identification. Well, what is the difference in a spotted eagle and a white eagle and a red eagle and a golden eagle and a bald eagle? I won't get into Ed Cleary's background. None. Except that it is an identification of duty. Of duty. So I say to her, never mind. Never mind. You and Little Crow are one. You represent the golden feather. He represents the silver feather. And I wonder how many in this room even realize there is an eagle on your place called the Imperial Eagle. It is the rarest of all the eagles. In the sunlight, it looks like a snow-crested golden statue. Iridescent feathers in the sun. Its wings along the front are crowned as if snow had piled up on them in flight. Underneath, as the juveniles lose the patterns that you will find on the golden eagle, all these flight feathers are silver underneath. And a portion of the tail is silver. The rest of the bird is bronze gold. And again, it has nothing to do with status. It has everything to do with identification. These two could possibly hate each other, and it wouldn't matter, because a responsibility is so close that it doesn't matter what they think about it. That's just the way it is. But I want to tell you something. At a soul level, these two are so close that there is never even necessary a thought about it. And when he knows that something has really hit her, he'll be on that phone. Or he will send an eagle or a raven to their patio. And you ones cannot make this journey through this veiled time without those kinds of spiritual connections. You'll go mad. So what did George say to Mr. X? Little Crow tells his group. Mr. X interrupts and says, his group, isn't he an Indian? Yes, he has about 170 in his group, in his gathering. And then there's talk about where. He tells them about them and that work. He tells his group not to read any of that stuff. Don't take that paper or those journals. Stay away from them. They are a cult. Yes, he tells them like it is. Not the Imperial Eagle that I know. I can promise George Green this will come back to rest on his head. And whether little Desiree knows or not, she is destined to be caught in the backwash. Man does have to make choices. And I'm going to change my mind. I want you to read Desiree's writing. This is one of the finest writings I've ever read, and it comes from a soul torn. She searches and searches, and just because of the things that have happened, if you discard truth, because of what is going on in this human physical plane, you're making errors. And in her efforts to sort out truth, her work is also misused for the wrong purposes. Attached to something totally inappropriately to make a point. On the other hand, we take responsibility for ourselves when we become mature adults.
This is called Choosing, dated October 22nd, 1993. Greetings. I am Desiree, and I have some information to share which I have been given. Let this information speak for itself to your soul. I take responsibility for that which is given to me to write by my advisors. How many choices do you make in one day? How many choices have you made this day up to this moment?
Well, I take it back. This. This letter from Leon is the information she has been given. Note her date. This is months old. Go on, please.
Do you even know when you are choosing? Do you know what propels you to make each choice? Can you tell when your physical ego, bound by emotion and intellect, is choosing? Can you tell when you choose from your totality of oneness with your source at center? Many questions for each of us to ponder upon. You may ask, why is it important to understand how and why we choose what we choose? The answer is very simple. Soul perfection. One makes choices which either reinforce the ego's limited perception of separation in its reality, or one makes choices which balance with the totality of the whole. Balance or imbalance. Perfection or imperfection. Judgment or neutrality. What is a perfect thought? Can you take the thought concept of love as you have lived it and match it to that which your source has given you? Would you like to learn to choose outside of your ego perception? Would you like to experience perfect love? Can you be perfect love in this moment? Where do you begin? First, by asking your source, your creator, to show you how. Secondly, by having no expectations and being willing to be humbly quiet, that you may hear him between the clutter of your ego's intellect. Thirdly, by offering your will to him that created you, that you may be lifted in your perception and purified in thought. Friends, that is the lesson for this writing. It is best you each decide how to interpret this lesson and what you will do with it. Another choice. I am encouraged to write this message, especially for those of you who consider yourselves to be, quote, newly awakened, in a sense, to a bigger picture of what we, humanity, have done to this world and how we did it. This message is for those of you who choose fear to motivate you or paralyze you. I don't know how you will feel about the fact that you are choosing to be afraid or in fear. To me, it was a liberating concept in the sense that I realized that if I choose my responses, that I could choose to replace the fear. Now, the tricky part. I had come face to face with my ego when I realized that my fear was a product of my ego perception. This, of course, led me to realize that I was mostly perceiving reality through the illusion of my self-separated ego. I had, therefore, been influenced in all of my choices by my physical body, my emotions, and my mind intellect. The moment of truth for me came that as I reflected on my life, I realized that I had been living almost entirely in this void of separation and imperfection. And from that place, I was striving to know the truth, to make perfect choices, to achieve perfection, and nearly always falling short in my judgment of self. That, friends, is the wheel that most of us here on planet Earth have been stuck on for who knows how long. We are now being given the opportunity to get unstuck. Very simply put, we will become whole again within our totality as a reflection of our Creator when we integrate this ego into the wholeness of God. He knows exactly what to do with this ego when we give it to Him. The greatest lesson you will learn one way or another to achieve wholeness rather than separation, self-awareness rather than self-centeredness, is humility. When you have truly become humbled, then and only then will you become a giver of light, and this giving will be life. You will then be useful for the Creator instead of using His gift in your fantasy of separation. Then you can fulfill the one purpose which we all share as creations, and that is to praise God by our very being. This is when life begins for you. Let this message speak to your soul, which is the center for the perfect love of God. Thank you for your attention. May you find the peace, which is when you choose God. With love, your sister, Desiree.
Do you realize that, well, each of you will realize this, I get almost a blanket thought pattern pouring back to me. What'd she say? I mean, it is just what actually was said in that. It's what's not said in it that gives you your clue. Desiree was the kind, I said was, the kind that would go into her sanctuary. And she would call Sananda, and they would write. There's no clearing here. There is desperation of a human being struggling for some balance in existence, now being forced upon them. I don't care who it is. We must always have the warmest compassion. You don't know the contract of that other. And whatever she thought she was doing, when this relationship began, you have to understand something. A lot of the BS was exactly that, BS, but a lot of it was truth. When she met George Green, far older than she, a father figure to her, he had three yachts. He met her, first time they were together really, was on one of these cruises. She was not poverty stricken, as you think of on the street, poverty stricken. But she, like everybody, had had bad relationships with her family situation, and so she went out into the world early. So it doesn't matter why we get into the predicaments we do as the human being experiencing. But if we allow ourselves to be trapped in a situation just because we don't want to take the responsibility for making it right, then we're going to drift around in that sea of confusion. She said she's chosen. She has not chosen anything except to look at and consider the lie. Because it's easier to live in the situation in which she finds herself within that lie than to confront the cost of seeing the truth. I don't like to use personal examples because they're painful. But I consider that today, maybe after all of these years, Dorma deserves some of this that I'm giving her. Why does George Green want to hurt her so badly? Because she represents Hatton. And now it is a very worldly thing of ego involvement. No one dares hit Hatton, you notice. That's the greatest truth and confirmation you will ever have. Even the ones who denounce you people as a group or Dorma, Doris, EJ, Charles, Ed Cleary, anybody will not take on the fact of it, and that is Hatton. They'll misspell my name. They'll dance all around it. Well, that Hatton is not my Hatton. But what has happened, you have just acknowledged exactly who I am. You will find that your own enemies, the judge so far, has been the only one that has been honest about it. He said, I don't need to talk to those others. I'm just telling you, it's her I'm going to put in jail. Because that's all I have as a physical being to put in jail. The rest is immaterial, irrelevant in this courtroom. That's not nifty for Doris. On the other hand, it does indicate there has been a recognition of the facts involved. Or the potential thereof. Because to say that she cannot receive from God means that every preacher on a pulpit is a liar. Everyone who receives from higher source is a liar. if you can also say there is no higher source or the possibility thereof. There just comes sometimes along the way when the disappointments and the continual confrontation, when all you're trying to do is just get through and do your job. You're not threatening anybody. You're spending your time in the basement. How could you possibly be out there upsetting everybody else in the world? Well, obviously, something is upsetting them. Something is upsetting them. Well, that something is called truth. Nobody wants to hear it. And yet with it come the greatest gifts that you as mankind will ever have. But few will stay long enough to receive them. Ones will back off farther and farther and farther, mainly from the presence that's with a CE. If I don't go down there and hear it, I won't have to face it. Not realizing that that is your connection to give you the bubble that allows you to face it. That allows you to give yourself permission to accept these marvelous, wondrous gifts for yourself. It's a wondrous time to be experiencing. A wondrous time. I don't know if you could do something about it, but I'll tell you one thing. It is coming down, and Russia owns you, and it's the Bolshevik element of the Russian society. I'd like for Rick to take that paper now and let's share these things. Maybe he can pick out some highlights or read the whole thing. It's worthy of it. I want you to know what is happening with Yeltsin.
I think I will read the whole thing on both counts.
Very good.
First one is titled Constitutional Changes Mark End of Compromise. Yeltsin Seeks Unfettered Powers for Presidency. And this is from two authors in Moscow. And it's out of the Financial Times of London. Boris Yeltsin is seeking to place unfettered powers in the Russian presidency with a series of constitutional amendments, rendering the office invulnerable to challenge from a future parliament. A series of amendments to the new constitution, now being thrashed out by a constitutional assembly, point to a greatly strengthened presidency and an end to previous efforts to compromise with the growing power of the regions. A set of decrees issued by Mr. Yeltsin yesterday also marked the biggest drive yet to bring Russia's rebellious regions under a restored central command, with the president at its apex. Mr. Yeltsin has demanded that all regions and republics immediately pay all taxes due to the central government, on pain of having all credits and centrally distributed supplies suspended from November 1st. A number of republics and regions have withheld taxes while arguing with the federal authorities over their respective rights to spend them. Other regions have claimed republican status, while a group of regions have proclaimed a new Urals Republic. Under the constitutional amendments, the president would obtain the right to appoint the prime minister, rather than, as is now the case, merely to propose a candidate who must then be confirmed by the lower house of the new parliament. He would also be enabled to sack the government without the parliament's agreement, and ultimately disband it if it consistently opposed his choice. The president would no longer be impeached for breaking the Constitution, the issue on which the previous parliament sought to remove him. Treachery against the state or other serious crimes are now the only grounds for impeachment, which must itself be confirmed by a higher court, with the impeachment process completed within 3 months. The president would be empowered to suspend any executive body of power in Russia for breaking federal law, and the post of vice president would be abolished, leaving the prime minister as the next in line in case of death or incapacity. Amendments to the previous draft also include a canceling of separate citizenship rights. All foreign trade links would have to be organized by the center, while the form of government adopted by regions and republics would need approval by the federal authorities. The draft, which must be completed within the next 2 weeks, will then go to a referendum before being adopted. And the next one is titled Making Good on Pledge by the Bolsheviks, Yeltsin Hopes to Make Peasants the Masters. There's a Russian name here I can't read, so the Daily something yesterday heralded its announcement of President Boris Yeltsin's decree giving Russian citizens the right to buy, sell, rent, and bequeath land by reprinting its own front page of exactly 76 years ago that contained the decree on land by the new Bolshevik government, which proclaimed that land would be returned to the peasants. The decree said I-Z-V-E-S-T-I-Y-A, Izvestia, claimed to make the peasants the masters, but remained a piece of propaganda, while the reality soon became one of state ownership and dispossession of peasant proprietors in favor of collectivism. The present decree eschews grand-sounding phrases in favor of a definition of rights and a description of the mechanisms under which citizens can buy and sell land in order to create a class of farmer proprietors with fully guaranteed rights for the first time in Russian history. The state will guarantee and protect the right to buy, sell, rent, transfer, and divide land freely, reserving only the right to claim land for strategic state use after paying the market price for it. Foreigners and foreign companies can participate in the process of buying and selling land, but apparently only the decree is, the decree is vague on the point. In association with Russian companies, land can be used for agricultural purposes or for development of any kind. In a move analogous to the rights given to workers in state enterprises, workers on state and collective farms will have the right to buy plots of land at discounted prices. Land can be sold off in auctions or offered for sale privately to competitive bids.
Now, how many do you think can afford anything?
I wonder if this is a bid like the Ecker bid.
It's sort of like the RTC, yes. Yep.
The new state body with offices in all regions, the Russian Federation Committee for Land Resources and Land Construction, will be the body charged with ensuring that land sales go through. Sure. It will have offices in all regions and is clearly designed to override the inevitable objections and barriers raised to land sales by local authorities and the leadership of state and collective farms to a measure they have bitterly resisted for years. Resistance to the move to make land a commodity is not confined to former communist leaders and bureaucrats in the regions, but is often strongly expressed by the state and collective farm workers themselves, who see the growth of a private farming sector as a threat to a life which, though poor, is secure and undemanding. At the same time, those who have already embarked on private farming have faced delays, hostility, and sometimes intimidation, as well as a lack of capital and equipment designed to the needs of small farmers. Russian land has only briefly been freely tradable in the decade before the First World War, following agrarian reform pushed through by Mr. Praetor Stuypen, the Prime Minister. It succeeded in creating a class of peasant proprietors who were dispossessed two decades later by ruthless collectivization, which left only small plots in the hands of the peasants throughout the Soviet Union. Mr. Viktor Kolystin, the agricultural minister, and as such the highest representative of the agricultural lobby, has already sought to limit the damage he sees the decree is doing by saying that no foreigners can buy land, that speculation in land should be avoided, and that no small farmer should be allowed to hire labor. However, the decree gives a solid guarantee of the state's intention to tackle what has been the largest inhibition of dismantling of the socialist system. It will, however, require a vigorous response from would-be farmers if it is to herald the revolution in the countryside it clearly hopes for. And then there's a little caption up above that reads, "Parliamentary elections ordered by Boris Yeltsin will not be fair, but they are the last chance for democracy in Russia," a liberal opposition leader said yesterday.
Well, and you're going to send the United States over there to monitor it, too. But, you know, to help those people understand the system.
Reuter reports from Moscow, quote, "These elections are a far cry not only from democracy, but even from simple logic," said Mr. Grigory Yavlinsky, a prominent economist and leader of a large electoral bloc opposing Mr. Yeltsin. Quote, "But realizing this, we still feel we have no other way than to take part in elections, even under their dubious rules," he said. Mr. Yeltsin has ordered elections to the State Duma, the lower chamber of a new style legislature called the Federal Assembly, for December 12th, with presidential elections to follow 6 months later.
And remember, number one, the law of the bureaucracy. Whatever they say they're going to do, they will produce exactly the opposite. So if they say they're going to give the peasants, the little people, the you guys, land and capability of production, etc., that means to you, you will be had. You will end up with nothing. When they control the money and they control the resources of the force that can compel you to comply, they've got you. And once they have gotten the programming so that they train the mind and get control of the education, they have the force to mandate what it is they want to accomplish. There's one thing they're overlooking. That's Pamyat. There is a tremendous amount of power left against this system. Will it rise up enough to put a stop to what is going on? And what will it mean to you in America if that happens? You're going to have to confront who you are versus what your government is. And your government is the seat of the Bolshevik power. And when the Russian Pamyat, or freedom, what you might call the white Russian, let us call it the Christian or the religious Russian, the non-anti, you know, the teachings have been atheistic, forced upon the people. When that group responds, and in the Ukraine, and somewhat in Georgia, but especially the Ukraine, there is still enough nuclear warhead power to wipe you out. Literally, to destroy the world. Because when this happens, and you don't know who has been behind all of the arms, etc., that have gone into Iran, Iraq, you know that Russia was feeding Iraq until you got into it and it was all decided politically what would happen. But above all, the masses of Chinese will do what they're told to do. And there will be a sea of them. And they are joint venturing, not just with Henry Kissinger, my friends, with places like Iran. And they are joint venturing on things like nuclear power and weaponry. And it wasn't their satellite that fell.
Excuse me, Commander.